party tonight.
All right!
We're gonna have a TV party, all right!
Tonight!
Saturday Night Live!
Monday Night Football! Jefferson!
Vegas! I wouldn't be without my TV for a day!
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. And it's Thursday. That means Triple Play Thursday. And that's one artist, three songs. And you can call it 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 for it. That's one artist, three songs, Triple Play Thursday, and there you go. We are here. It's a Thursday morning, and we're going to be talking about Bonnie and Clyde. It's the anniversary of their death, and we're also going to talk about great gunfighters in movie history and TV history as well, and more. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. And there you go. Now, it is time for us to say hello to our good friend Dan Feinberg, a TV critic for Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. Lots of stuff to talk about this week. And there's always lots of TV, but we have a lot of stuff to talk about with Dan because of the upfront press conferences that happened this past week. Or let's bring Dan to the show. Hey, Dan.
How are you doing, Nick?
Good. How are you, sir?
Oh, busy.
Yeah.
Busy.
All right. Well, let's get to the upfront press conferences in a little bit, okay? We'll save on that a little bit. Before we jump in, it's on my DVR and I'm going to watch it in the morning. Did you watch that live All in the Family Jeffersons thing last night?
I did indeed.
And should I look forward to it?
Some. It's a fun thing and I would love for them to keep doing it. I think that a lot of the performances are perhaps a little bit too kind of indebted to the original actors because you just can't get away from them.
Sure.
And I would say that Woody Harrelson was probably a particular disappointment just because Archie Bunker is so indelible and unfortunately he's kind of doing an impression. But in general, it goes to show, A, how sharp those scripts were, and it's a lot of actors having a lot of fun. It's definitely worth watching.
Good.
It's just not consistent, but, you know, why would anyone have expected it to be consistent?
Right. I loved the idea. When I first heard about it, when Kimmel first plugged it, like, about a month ago or so, I was like, wow, that's really great. And then you're just like, having the star power that they have and the celebrities that were involved, I thought it would be a lot of fun.
It definitely is, and I hope that people watch it because it seems like the kind of thing where if you could turn it into an annual tradition or, you know, even more than that, it would be a really good way to educate some young viewers on television history and kind of the shifts in the format. So I hope people tuned in. I'm curious as to how a lot of the humor and jokes played for very young viewers, but I also don't know how many very young viewers were probably watching it tonight.
Right. I'm looking forward to it. And I agree with you 100%. I think they should do that some more. Turn some people on to stuff that they maybe don't know about, a younger generation that they don't know about, especially with stars that they like now, which I think is an interesting way to do it.
It's a minor frustration, though, because even if it turns out that audiences watch this and really like it, the shows aren't available in streaming anywhere, so it's kind of introducing them to something that they can't then go and immediately watch on Hulu, Netflix, Amazon, whatever their streaming platform of choice is. So it's a little bit of a tease if it turns out the viewers actually really love it. But still, I hope they do it more in the future. It seems like the kind of thing that you could have a lot of fun with as an annual event.
Yeah, that's cool. Okay, I'm looking forward to watching that. And I have to watch, of course, What We Do in the Shadows. I will watch that right after I watch The All in the Family. I thought last week's What We Do in the Shadows was again, hilarious. But the one with all the cameos that you told me about was unbelievable.
the cameos in that one were pretty spectacular, and it kind of kept going because all that FX did when they sent out the screeners to press was they just said, don't spoil the cameo. So it's like, okay, fine, whatever. And like the first one or two people show up and you're like, okay, sure. But Dave Bautista could be the cameo they didn't want me spoiling.
Right.
He's pretty big. You know, he's in the Avengers and all that. And then it goes one after another, after another. Pretty crazy.
It was pretty crazy. And Kristen Schaal, too, could have been a cameo as well. And she was hilarious in that episode. Hilarious.
It is exactly the kind of world in which Kristen Schaal fits right in, to be sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And I like the training of I always forget her name, Jonah Hill's sister.
I also do, and I need to see her movie this weekend so that I can remember who she is.
I hear it's great. I'm seeing it this weekend as well. And she was great in Lady Bird, and she's really funny on What We Do in the Shadows. And how she's handling the training, the Nadja character is handling the training. I love it when she refers to her as a stupid little vampire baby, which just cracked me up every time she said it. So,
I thought the digital effects on her version of the bat, were rather ridiculously hilarious.
Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of FX, man, I thought Fosse Verdon. The episode from Tuesday night of Fosse Verdon, that's the one that they have to send in for Michelle Williams to get the Emmy. That's got to be the one, right?
I would guess probably. I mean, she had a few really good episodes, like, say, 4 or 5 in a row. It's not like they choose a wrong one. This one had a lot of musical stuff, so, you know, if they want to accentuate that, there she did. Pretty much sing halfway through Chicago, so yay. And then she also did the... she did the Lupita Nyong'o voice from Us for about 5 minutes. That was a little strange.
That didn't even occur to me. Didn't even occur to me, but yeah. That...
I thought of it immediately, and I'm like, okay, there's no way that this was not shot beforehand. So she definitely did not do it intentionally, but goodness gracious, she was doing the Lupita Nyong'o voice.
You're absolutely right. I can't believe that didn't even enter my mind while I was watching it. But yeah, you're right. You're right.
It might have ruined it for you. So better that it didn't. But no, I liked a lot of this episode, and I thought it played Fosse's insecurities on a different level than, say, the past 3 or 4 have. So I just get fatigued when they do the montage of him popping pills and screwing different women and stuff. I'm like, I've seen that before, but there were a lot of things he did in this past episode that were, I would say, borderline sociopathic. And yet were fascinating to watch in a different way from just the, oh, look, he's cheating on his wife and doing drugs. So I appreciated the different colors he got to play.
Yeah, the week before, the episode before was just like, it was all that jazz light, essentially.
Oh, sure.
And I was not, that was, to me, that's the weakest episode of the entire season. And I love the fact that this one was told from her point of view specifically. And that scene where... they're performing the number for her, and he's just sitting there in the theater lobby, and he wants to make it a duet instead of a solo. That whole scene to me, like from beginning to end, especially when Michelle Williams just goes off, I just thought that was one of the best acted scenes in the series. I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah, that was a great scene, and it was a great scene for Michelle Williams. That category at the Emmys is going to be insane with the competition between Michelle Williams, Amy Adams, and Patricia Arquette. That is a good race to watch. If the Emmys knew what was good for them, they'd hold that one for right near the very end.
Yeah, no question. All right, finales have happened. A couple of big finales. Let's go to Big Bang Theory. I never watched the show because I just never thought it was funny. But how did the Big Bang Theory finale go for you? Because I think it was satisfying for a lot of fans, right?
I thought it was, and you know, it had an easier job to be satisfying than the other finale that I assume that we will talk about next, just because the Game of Thrones finale had clear expectations, people had needs that had to be met, blah, 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 and the Big Bang Theory did not have that. It really just had to end on the right emotional note, whatever it happened to be, and they had to choose what the note was, and I thought they landed it emotionally fairly well, and they did a very good job of making sure that the actors who needed emotional screen time did well with that. So I thought that it was a great episode for Jim Parsons. It was a great episode for Johnny Galecki. It was a great episode for Kaley Cuoco. And, you know, the plot took the characters to a nice enough resting place, I guess. But all I wanted to do was to laugh a couple times and to feel a little bit of emotion at the end as it ended. And I thought that they did that well.
Okay. All right, and before we break here, we don't have to spend a ton of time on it because everybody's been talking about it. What did you think of the Game of Thrones?
I thought it had good moments, and I thought it had frustrating moments. There are things about it that are still kind of sticking in my craw, scenes that don't make any sense to me at all. But, you know, it was such an exhausting season, and the audience reactions for the entire season were so exhausting that I feel like we all probably just need, like, 6 months, a year, 5 years to sort of cool down, and then we can all come back together and go, okay, so what did you really think of the Game of Thrones finale? Because we're too close to it now.
Right. Okay. All right. I love the fact that then the water bottle thing happened, and this is like 2 weeks after the coffee cup thing. I just
very strange that like the script supervisor got laid off early on in production or something. I don't know how to explain any of it.
So crazy. All right, Dan, hang on. Okay.
Sure.
All right, Dan Feinberg is with us. We're going to talk about some TV, some new TV, and the upfront press conferences happened. Busy time for Dan Feinberg. It's always great when he joins us. Every 2 weeks, he writes for The Hollywood Reporter, and you can check him out on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. More TV talk after the news right here on WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories of a beautiful downtown Chicago. It's Thursday. That means Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. One artist, three songs, 312-981-7200. This is the anniversary of Bonnie and Clyde's death, and we're going to talk about some facts about that outlaw duo, talk about Bonnie and Clyde, the movie, and how they've been portrayed, and then the 25 best gunfighters in TV and movie history. We're also going to talk about real-life crimes, kind of a crime related theme this morning on the show. You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Nick D Show, and you can also give us a call, text, and Triple Play Thursday request at 312-981-7200. We are joined every 2 weeks by Dan Feinberg, who TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. Lots of TV to talk about. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you, Nick.
All right. So let's talk about now. We've been waiting years for this. May 31st on HBO. It's finally good. It's going to be a big day for me because not only does the Deadwood movie premiere on HBO, but Godzilla opens on that day. So that's like a bookend of love for me. But I'm very curious, and I know we've been waiting a long time. You saw the Deadwood movie. What did you think?
I thought that it was satisfying and did what fans needed it to do. I think that's the way that I'm putting it, is I don't know that it's an urgent story that David Milch wrote for this. And everyone who watched Deadwood knows that the third season ended very much not as a finale. It was not designed as a finale. It did not feel like a finale. Lots of times you get normal season finales that feel like they could substitute in as series finales. This didn't even feel like that. Going back and rewatching it now, it just leaves you.
Yeah.
And so fans have had to sit around with that for 13 years. And knowing that that was not the way anything was supposed to end. And knowing that HBO has always been so great at making sure that things got to end on their own terms, even if those terms infuriated some people. And that's ultimately what this does. It sets things right internally. If you've been kind of twisted up inside, if you've been holding your breath on the Deadwood world, the movie is 110 minutes of bringing you to where you need to get to walk away contentedly. And I think there's a lot of value in that. The story of it is pretty straightforward. It's enough to bring the characters back together. There's a murder that gets everyone tense in Deadwood, and everyone stares at each other and grits their teeth and swears at each other and in all the ways that you want them to. And all of the actors are wonderful, and time has aged all of them, even if a lot of that was done in a makeup chair, because in a lot of these people's cases, they barely aged at all. But it's satisfying. It didn't blow me away. I think if you're keeping in mind at all times kind of the backstory and David Milch's diagnosis of Alzheimer's recently and how that's been in the news, that adds a lot of weight to it. And there's a lot of it that's about memory and about time passing people by. And if you're sitting watching and you're thinking, okay, you know, I know what this means to David Milch.
Yeah, absolutely.
It does hit you in a different way. And but it's satisfying, and that to me is so important. It does nothing to ruin the show. It does nothing to ruin the characters, and that's always my biggest concern when we go back to these worlds is will it feel the same, and will I feel as if they're pandering to me, and did they ruin my memories of a perfectly good thing? Yeah. This does not do that.
Good. I'm really looking forward to it. I can't wait. I'm curious, do they handle the Powers Booth thing okay?
Very, very little, honestly. It's acknowledged, it's touched on. Joni has a major role, and so she kind of acknowledges it, but it's not like anyone stops and pauses and, you know, celebrates the life of Cy Tolliver, because that would be a strange thing. I think I might have expected a beat or two more of emotion around that particular boss, but that just doesn't seem to have been the way that Milch wanted to approach it.
Okay. All right. Well, that's that premieres on Friday, May 31st on HBO. So really, really looking forward to that. So my friend and future ex-wife, Dana DiLorenzo from Ash vs. Evil Dead, is part of a new show from Steve Conrad called Perpetual Grace Limited. Have you seen it yet?
I have not seen that one. And my colleague, Tim Goodman, who is one of the world's biggest fans of Steve Conrad's Amazon series Patriot. Which is perpetually on my I need to catch up on list.
Absolutely.
and the thing is, it seems like exactly the kind of show that I would like and that I would really enjoy, and I watched the pilot back when it was part of an Amazon pilot season, back when they used to do that, and it just for whatever reason didn't hit me right at that moment, and then it was as simple as Tim reviewing it and loving it going forward, and so then I felt two seasons behind, and that show is in kind of limbo, but I'm definitely curious what this one is going to look like, but I haven't rushed to watch it because it's a Tim Goodman review.
Yeah, I gotcha. Okay, well, I'm looking forward to it because I'm real good friends with Dana DiLorenzo at this point, and she was posting pictures last night. They had the premiere. And she was posting pictures. Evidently, she doesn't work with Ben Kingsley. And she doesn't have any scenes with Ben Kingsley, and met him last night at the premiere. And there's she posted a picture on Twitter of her embarrassing herself, because she tends to talk a lot. And there's a picture of her just gushing about Ben Kingsley, and she's got her hands in her face like she's embarrassed, and Ben Kingsley's got his hand on her shoulder like, it's okay. It's all right. So, but she's very excited.
I think he intimidates a lot of people.
Absolutely. Immediately if I were going to see him, I'd think Sexy Beast and then run. But she's very happy with it and very proud of it. And she gets most of her scenes with Louis Guzman. She plays his mistress. So, which I think
it has an amazing cast of character actors.
It does,
and so I'm very curious to see how it plays. Also curious to see how many people can figure out if they have FX, because I don't have it. So.
This is the second time I've subscribed to a channel because of Dana. Because I didn't have Stars until Ash versus, well, that's not because of Dana. I met Dana after Ash versus Evil Dead started. But that's, I got Stars because of that. And I now have Epics because I want to watch Perpetual Grace. So that premieres next Sunday. So
it's a good thing she's not more prolific though, cause that would really start hurting your bottom line at a certain point if she signed up for too many shows on too many channels.
Yes, you're right. You're absolutely right. Okay. All right. Well, let's talk about When They See Us. This is on Netflix, and you saw that one and popped a review on The Hollywood Reporter. Tell us about that.
Indeed. That is also premiering next Friday. So next Friday is a big day between that and the Deadwood movie. It's not really all that surprising that it's a big day, because that is also the last day of the pre-Emmy window for next year's Emmys.
Okay. So that makes sense.
There are a couple things that are sneaking in under the wire, and these two are big ones. When They See Us is Ava DuVernay's four-part, but several of the parts are really long. A couple of the parts are basically 90 minutes, so it's not 4 hours. It's more like 5 hours and 10, 520. And it is her take on the Central Park 5 story that goes out of its way to only barely ever use the phrase Central Park 5. It's sort of the principle of it is that the name Central Park 5 was the name that the New York tabloid media, that the New York police, that Donald Trump that a bunch of people trying to railroad these five young men assigned to them basically as a way of taking away their humanity.
Right.
And the miniseries is to some degree about restoring their names, restoring their humanity, and it's extremely powerful. It's very, very well acted. It has some structural things that I'm not sure I fully get, kind of decisions in how the story is told, gaps in the narrative and whatnot, but it's impressive. It hits you in the gut an awful lot. It fills you with exactly the sense of outrage that, you know, it's that it's designed to do.
Yeah.
And I think it's fairly impressive, and it's another thing that will be in the movie miniseries, limited series Emmy field, though it does not have a lead female performance to compete with all of the other great people we talked about earlier.
Got it. Okay. And it's got a hell of a cast. I'm looking at this cast. Man, oh, man. I mean, Omar's in it. Michael K. Williams, Vera Farmiga, John Leguizamo, Felicity Huffman. I wonder how people are going to take and that.
She's playing the prosecuting attorney who railroaded and constructed the case around these five young men. So it is very much a heel turn, and probably the fact that we're already looking at her out of the side of our eyes, it probably benefits.
There's a lot of great names in this. I'm looking at this, and anything with William Sadler, and I'm in. That's how it works with me. I love that guy.
But the thing of note is that most of these people are in it for, I don't want to say blink and you miss them,
right,
but I would say with William Sadler, it's pretty close to that. He's got a couple scenes in the first episode and a couple scenes in the fourth episode, and that's basically it. There's one episode that focuses on the actual court case and the attorneys for the Central Park Five, for the young men. They're played by Joshua Jackson, Christopher Jackson from Hamilton, and also, I guess, from Bull, if that matters, and Blair Underwood. And so you've got those very big actors. They're only in one episode. Felicity Huffman is in two episodes. It's a lot of actors kind of coming in to enrich very, very small parts with the fact that they're awesome. And
I got it.
It's a great strategy if you're Ava DuVernay and you can get John Leguizamo to come in for a week or two. You can get Michael Kenneth Williams to come in for a week or two, and suddenly those little parts become fantastic.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. All right, Dan, hang on, okay?
Sure.
All right, Dan Feinberg is with us. That's When They See Us, which is debuting on Netflix on the May 31st. So we're going to take a break. We come back, more TV talk with Dan Feinberg on WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here in Chicago, downtown Chicago. It's Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. One artist, three songs. We'll play them later. 312-981-7200. Got a crime theme for the rest of the show. Real crimes. We're talking about Bonnie and Clyde, and then gunslingers on TV and in movies. 312-981-7200, which also ties into Deadwood, which we were talking about a little bit earlier with our guest, Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, and that's F-I-E-N. Lots more TV to talk about. Let's welcome Dan back to the show. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you, and Seth Bullock definitely should be one of the top gunslingers, and of course, Raylan Givens as well. So Timothy Oliphant, he slings guns well.
He does. He absolutely does. No question about it. All right, let's jump into the upfront press conferences here. Tell everybody what that is.
So basically, the upfronts are the 4 days in May where the television networks, the broadcast television networks, present their new schedules to advertisers. It's to some degree a relic of the old television industry where the broadcast networks were either A, the only show in town, or B, the most significant show in town. They are not that anymore. And so the upfronts week, when I started covering TV, and I'm not saying that was back in the golden ages, we're not talking back in the All in the Family time, but, you know, we're talking 15 years ago, it really was the biggest week of work in the entire calendar, because basically the upfronts, they're they consist, the process of covering them consists of there's a press release with the new schedules, and there's a press conference with a network executive, usually done by the phone, and then there's a long, between an hour and 2 hours, dog and pony show for the advertisers at different New York City venues. But in the week leading up to it, it's nonstop, one after another, cancellation, renewal. It'd be, you know, just days where if you cover the industry, you're in front of your computer at 7 a.m. and you can't go to lunch without something being canceled or renewed. And it's just exhausting and wearing. It's not really that anymore because it's not that no one cares, but no one cares as much. Also, people are canceling fewer things. So there were probably only about two-thirds the cancellations this year as last year, possibly even less than that, because a lot of things with low ratings kind of in this economy scrape by for two seasons, three seasons, just because that's how the business runs. So yeah. It feels different now than it did even 5 or 10 years ago.
Well, what were some of the notable cancellations?
There really were very, very few. To me, the biggest, most notable cancellation was ABC's Speechless, which is a show that I adore. I think it is a great show. I think it is a special show that serves a specific purpose in the TV landscape, both in terms of being a very, very funny family comedy, but also a family comedy about a family with a disabled child and how they come together and, you know, just them being a family, which is not represented on television all that frequently. And unfortunately, it was canceled because the ratings were not very good, yeah. Of course, but ABC probably could have kept it around for another year or two if they wanted to, and it could still hypothetically get saved. That's the other silly thing about the upfronts these days, is that anything that gets canceled one day, say, for example, Fox canceling Brooklyn Nine-Nine last year, can get hypothetically picked up by NBC literally the next day. Nothing like that happened this year, but it could still happen. But yeah, there were no huge or shocking cancellations, really and truly. And so, minor disappointment there. Yeah, you like the drama of it.
All right. Okay, well, let's go. CBS, what did you think of their presentation?
I think that CBS's presentation every year tends to be the more people watch CBS than anything else. And so CBS doesn't usually need to bring all that much drama. This year, the press conference before the actual presentation had a little bit of drama because there were people asking why CBS decided to renew Bull, which had a lot of bad press last year involving a large settlement that they cut with Eliza Dushku about complaints about the working conditions on the show and harassment. And, you know, CBS paid her off and it was unpleasant. And CBS decided to pick the show up anyway. And they say that they picked it up because they feel as if it was a one-time behavior from Michael Weatherly, who has made CBS an awful lot of money over the years thanks to NCIS. So that was who they decided to give the benefit of the doubt to.
Speaking of a very similar situation, how did they handle the Les Moonves thing?
They acknowledged it at the press conference, reporters asked them, did it feel different making your schedule this year without Les Moonves?
Yeah.
And they said on the press conference, yes, it felt different. And then at the actual presentation itself, Stephen Colbert made one joke about it early in his, basically each one of the networks brings out their principal comic voice to make fun of the entire process. It's the thing that Jimmy Kimmel does better than anyone. He is spectacular and so far and away the best of the best at it. Colbert's okay, and he did make a Les Moonves joke, and it was the only one, and the audience kind of made uncomfortable sounds, and Colbert said, well, you knew there had to be one. There was literally only one, though. Mm-hmm. NBC had Seth Meyers, who was actually not very good. I usually think he's very good, but for whatever reason, they didn't want him making too many jokes about NBC, and so he didn't, and it wasn't funny. But as ever, Kimmel was extraordinarily funny, and he really is the king at that particular piece of entertainment.
Yeah. So what do CBS's shows look like?
CBS's shows look, I would say, interesting. They have a Chuck Lorre multicam with the somewhat cumbersome name of Bob Hart's Abishola. So, what? You know, that's not a name that... It stars Billy Gardell from Mike and Molly as a large man who appears to be in the sock business. Again, I've only seen the trailer for this. In the trailer, he talks a lot about socks. So I'm assuming it's professional. Otherwise, he's just a foot fetishist, which is also perfectly valid for a TV show. So anyway, he has a heart attack or something, and he has an African nurse whose name is Abishola, who takes care of him and changes his life. And the trailer has a sort of the mix of broad laughs and sincerity kind of thing that Chuck Lorre does very, very well on Mom. So it could be good. They've got something called Evil, which is from the Kings, the couple behind Good Fight and Good Wife, and they're very talented. And Evil has a very commercial feel. It appears to be part legal drama, part supernatural thriller, and part kind of dark comedy, it looks like. It's got a really good cast. Mike Coulter from Luke Cage and Good Wife. Michael Emerson from Lost and People of Interest. Katya Herbers, who people may or may not know from Manhattan and from a couple episodes of Westworld. So it's got a good cast. It looks like it could be good. They've also got, of all things, a single camera comedy starring Walton Goggins from The Shield and Justified as a really nice widower. So
that's weird.
it is odd casting, but as I keep saying, look, he has been so good at playing these off-kilter, vaguely evil, vaguely crazy characters and doing it on cable. If someone wants to give Walton Goggins the chance to play a nice guy for a little while and to make some CBS sitcom money, I am not going to be.
Oh yeah, no, I agree with you. I love that guy. I want him to work as much as humanly possible. So
I do. I still regret he had last development season an LA Confidential adaptation that CBS was briefly high on it that didn't go forward, and he was playing Jack Vincennes. He was playing the Kevin Spacey role from the movie, and that to me seemed like such a good idea, and I really wanted that to go forward so much, and for whatever reason, it was not CBS enough, so.
All right.
Oh, well.
Okay, and that's, by the way, that show is called The Unicorn.
Yes, right. That is the strange name of that show is The Unicorn, because when I say a show called The Unicorn, you think Walton Goggins is a lovable widower.
All right, Dan, hang out, okay?
Sure.
All right, we got to take a break here for the news, and when we come back, more from the upfront press conferences. We'll get more details about what's happening on the other networks as well. And that's Dan Feinberg from The Hollywood Reporter. Follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, FIEN. We'll be back after this. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. We are here until 5 a.m. Thursday, Triple Play Thursday, one artist, three songs. Get your requests in now, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. We're going to talk about Bonnie and Clyde. We're going to talk about famous gunslingers in TV and in movies, and real crimes coming up on the show. 312-981-7200 for talk and text, Triple Play Thursday requests. You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook, at Nick D Show. Like us right now. Dan Feinberg joins us every couple of weeks, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, and you can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, FIEN. More TV to talk about with Dan. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you much.
All right, well, let's talk about the upfront for ABC.
Well, ABC had Basically, ABC was kind of folded in towards the end of a massive two-plus-hour presentation by the entire newly formed Walt Disney Television Group that now includes a lot of Fox things. So that presentation included an appearance by John Landgraf from FX, who briefly talked about the new season of Fargo, which will be out sometime next year,
yes,
hopefully. But
yes,
there was footage of Chris Rock talking about it. So that looked exciting. I mean, I can't think there was anything that anyone mentioned all up front this week that I'm looking forward to more than another season of Fargo.
Right.
So
I can understand that.
By all means. Also featured National Geographic talking about the next season of Genius, which will be Aretha Franklin. So that might be fine. And then by the time ABC got around to actually doing its upfront, there was really very little for ABC to talk about. And also, ABC picked up only 5 or 6 new shows. So ABC has, among other things, they have something called Stumptown, which is based on a comic series and stars Kobe Smulders from How I Met Your Mother, yeah, as a gumshoe detective of some sort in Portland. It looked okay, I guess. I'm not getting excited about it, but I'm also not annoyed by it. They, you know, they made the sad thing about not picking up Speechless, and that was too bad. But they picked up a Blackish spinoff about young Rainbow. That's the Tracy Ellis Ross character.
Right.
That looks like it could be okay. They picked up a sort of supernaturally looking procedural starring Alison Tolman from the aforementioned Fargo. She is always good. But this was not the most exciting looking slate of new broadcast shows ever, and ABC was not hugely exciting, but the major purpose of that upfront was that ABC is part of this massive family now at Walt Disney, Fox Television Entertainment Group, and they're just going to buy and sell all of us.
and you said Jimmy Kimmel was incredibly entertaining.
Yes, Jimmy Kimmel was very funny. Definitely Jimmy Kimmel was the highlight. He made definite jokes about the futility of doing this on an annual basis and made jokes about all of the things that people were excited about last year that didn't go anywhere. The fact that advertisers come out every year and basically throw their money down a well, and that is true. That is what this week is. That was what last week is all about, is people throwing money down a well.
Okay. All right. Well, let's move on to NBC and Fox.
NBC has a couple interesting looking things. NBC's basic point was we're pretty stable, and that's not all that exciting, but they announced a lot of things that look very familiar and reassuring. So there's a legal drama set in Memphis starring Jimmy Smits. Okay, sure. You can probably guess what that is.
Yeah.
There's an adaptation of The Bone Collector, which is a movie that people vaguely remember existed.
I was just going to say, where did that come from?
I don't know who thought it was a thing that we really needed this year,
yeah,
now.
Yeah.
And to say nothing of the fact that it's not called The Bone Collector. It's called Lincoln, which is the name of the Denzel Washington character from the movie, or the character from the book, if you prefer to actually be literate.
Yeah.
and it stars Russell Hornsby, who is great, and I always love Russell Hornsby. And so Russell Hornsby as a partially paralyzed detective helping Arielle Kebble, who's playing the Angelina Jolie role, fight crime. Sure, why not? It just doesn't feel like all that timely a adaptation of anything, but mm-hmm, whatever. They have a semi-musical dramedy called Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist, which probably is the thing I'm most amused or excited by. It stars Jane Levy, who,
oh,
I believe we all love here.
Oh.
So I lead with the things that people want to hear.
Yeah.
I understand.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Though I don't hear you necessarily looking forward to this weekend's Netflix arrival, What/If, starring Renee Zellweger, but also Jane Levy.
Yeah, no, anything Jane Levy's in, I'm on. But I love her. I just think she's great. And
no, she is. She is fantastic. Yeah. I'm still not sure I'm going to watch what Flash is, but I will definitely watch Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist. It's about a young woman who has some sort of accident while in an MRI machine. There's a earthquake or something because it's San Francisco. And as a result, she starts hearing people's thoughts in song. And it's a okay enough premise, I guess. It sounds like it would be a Brian Fuller show, except Brian Fuller has nothing to do with it. On the other hand, Paul Feig, from Freaks and Geeks fame, is at least an executive producer. So could be interesting. And it also features, among other people, Peter Gallagher. And Peter Gallagher in the trailer gets to sing. And I am pro-Peter Gallagher singing. So, honestly, of all of the broadcast network shows, this one and Evil, which I mentioned earlier on CBS, are probably the two I'm closest to looking forward to, I think.
Okay. So, I was looking at your piece. They didn't mention Kenan Thompson's show that's going to be on at midseason?
They did not. It was it is a midseason show, and NBC has not yet announced how much exactly that will curtail Kenan Thompson's SNL responsibilities. Certainly in last week's finale, they did not give Kenan Thompson the kind of send-off that you would expect someone who had been there for as long as he has to get, which means that he's clearly going to be back on the show in the fall. I mean, they're not idiots. They know that that is a man who deserves as full a send-off as they could possibly give him if he's going. So I believe the plan is to have him be on SNL next year, just in a somewhat reduced capacity.
Right.
They're going to shoot the sitcom in New York, so...
Oh, they are. They're shooting the sitcom in New York. Oh, that's good.
I believe so. Okay. So they're going to work around him because they understand how important he is to the SNL brand, and also for one season, you don't want him to you don't want to lose him just in case the show vanishes in a hurry. But
a la Bobby Moynihan.
that was not a good show.
No,
and
it wasn't.
Not necessarily the best use of his departure from
SNL.
But
totally agree.
So they did a really lame thing where, you know, just an SNL skit with Kenan as Steve Harvey, as he has done ever so many times on SNL. Not good at all. It seemed like a perfectly reasonable time to mention, we have a Kenan Thompson sitcom. Also, for some reason, they did not. I do not know why not.
And he's a judge on some reality comedy show. He's one of the judges.
I cannot, at this exact minute, keep track of the 8,000 people who are hosting various different reality and competition shows.
Yeah.
Like, for example, during the live ABC thing, as you will discover when you get around to it, there are ads for the new version of Card Sharks, which is hosted by Joel McHale, the new version of Press Your Luck, which I believe is hosted by Elizabeth Banks. There are a lot of people these days who are enjoying the...
Yeah.
Limited schedule and money that come from hosting a high-profile network game show.
Sure, of course. Wow. Well, he's one of the judges, and I can't remember who the other judges are on this thing. I can't remember the name of it, but there was a piece where somebody wrote a piece about, I can't remember where it was, I think it was the New York Times, wrote a piece about how busy Kenan Thompson is going to be in the future.
Good for him.
Yeah.
He deserves to be busy.
I agree. Now, you mentioned, Fox, now we don't even really know the future of what's going on with Fox.
Well, we know the future we know what they're trying to do, and we know that they're basically putting themselves out there as kind of this pseudo-independent network without a currently aligned studio, because 20th Century Fox TV was purchased as part of the Disney deal.
Right.
So basically you have Fox, but Fox's primary thing that they were attempting to prove at their upfront was, we've got programming that's going to keep the lights on. And so, among other things, they emphasized that they're going to have Thursday Night Football, they're going to have wrestling on Friday, they have college football on Saturday, they're going to have Animation Domination back, entirely animation on Sunday. So at that point, Fox is pretty much just in business. And then they announced some shows, and I wouldn't say that they sounded all that spectacular. There was a show with Timothy Hutton as a fertility doctor who impregnated a bunch of people, and and that's hilarious and wouldn't look very good except that it's from Jason Kadams of Friday Night Lights and Parenthood. So I will always give him a chance. Fox is going to be an interesting influx thing to watch. They also have a Stephen Dorff modern Western directed by David Ayer that I didn't think looked very good called Prodigal Son, which sort of positions him as your quintessential cop who does not play by the rules, who somehow becomes the sheriff of Los Angeles. And, oh, what will he do dealing with bureaucracy while not playing by the rules?
Yeah, a cop not playing by the rules from David Ayer? How did that happen?
You know, sometimes he likes to think outside the box. Look, on the other hand, it's a thing he can do, and whichever the one was with Jake Gyllenhaal and Michael Pena.
Yeah.
I'm blanking on its title.
Blanking on the name of it too. End of Watch. End of Watch.
Yes. That one I thought was really good.
I like the one with Kurt Russell. That he did Scott Speedman and Kurt Russell. He wrote that one.
Yes.
And I can't remember. I can't remember the name of that one either.
I think it had blue in the title.
Yeah, blue.
I think
Dark Ron Blue. Shelton Dark Blue.
That one, didn't he?
Dark Blue. I'm sorry.
I think Ron Shelton directed that one.
Ron Shelton, Ron Shelton did direct that, yeah.
It was a very strange and somewhat incompatible. But at this point, mostly what I'm thinking of for David Ayer is Suicide Squad.
It's going to
take a fair amount to get me to think of something else for David Ayer until
at this point.
I do.
Yeah. All right. Baskets is coming back. I keep seeing commercials for it, and I'm unbelievably excited. So that means we can start talking about that on a biweekly basis in June.
Our weekly conversation about Baskets, I assume that the listeners are pumped for that.
I hope so. I really do. I hope by this point, because we are incessant about our love for Baskets, and I can't wait for it to come back. I'm really excited about it. So
I am right there with you. And the whichever the teaser was that they had for it with the animation, made me very happy.
Me too. So. The train and him hanging on the side of the train and everything was really great. All right, Dan, I know you're always keeping busy, and everybody can follow you on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, and read you on The Hollywood Reporter. Dan, always a pleasure, and we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Sounds good. Talk to you soon, Nick.
Take care, buddy. There you go. Dan Feinberg, everybody. Read him at The Hollywood Reporter. And again, follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. All right. We're going to take a break, and we will be back on 720 WGN.